Welcome back. We're in the second hour of Immunize Wisely with my guest, Mike of vaccinepapers.org. There's a wealth of information. We're just in the middle of discussing what macrophages actually are doing with the aluminum. They're gobbling up these nanoparticles of aluminum that are used in vaccines that actually. The vaccines have to have these particulates because that's the type of aluminum that is used as an adjuvant. Because the kind that dissolves won't give the immune activation that is required of a vaccine
That's
to
correct.
produce the antibodies necessary. So that, I'm just doing a little bit of a sum there. So go ahead and tell where these macrophages that are gobbling it up from the injection side. They travel all over the body, and they can go ahead, cross
Yeah,
the
so macrophages have the ability to move around the body through the lymphatic system and the blood, but they don't move around all the time. Most of what macrophages do is just sit and wait. They sit and wait for a signal to get up and move, or for a nearby infection to occur or something like that. And macrophages respond to a particular type of cytokine, or actually it's usually called a chemokine. It's called MCP1, macrophage chemoattractant protein number one. And the name is very appropriate. The protein does exactly what it says it does. It attracts macrophages. So when you have an infection in your body somewhere, or you have some inflammation in your brain, MCP1 will typically be produced. And what that does is it summons the macrophages, potentially from all around your body, to head to that location to help deal with the problem. So it turns out that microglia in the brain can produce MCP1. And the microglia do that when there's inflammation in the brain, or even, and this is amazing, the microglia will produce MCP1 when there's inflammation elsewhere in your body. So if you have a sickness or an infection, there's one study I have that shows even a liver injury and damage to the liver sends a signal to the brain that then sends a signal to the macrophages to head to the brain, even though there's no injury in the brain. So when macrophages head to the brain, they carry with them the aluminum adjuvant that's inside them. And this is how aluminum adjuvant appears to get into the brain. And we know this because the trafficking of aluminum into the brain is dependent on MCP1. If you don't have a lot of MCP1 production, you don't get aluminum in the brain. So
Okay,
macrophages,
question.
yeah.
Let me just ask real quick. So these macrophages, they do die off and there's new ones being produced.
Right. They have a lifetime
So
of about 2 or 3
is the
months.
ones holding on to this aluminum being are they immortal or something? I mean, do they always just contain aluminum once they're injected in? What happens to those macrophages when they need to die off,
That's an excellent question. And I've wondered that myself. There's no research on it, but we do know that macrophages are definitely not immortal. They live for about 2 or 3 months at most. And when they die, they release their cellular contents, and other macrophages will come around and mop it up. And so the macrophages that clean up the dead macrophages then pick up the aluminum adjuvant. But for that in between, time, it looks to me like the aluminum adjuvant is released into the brain when the macrophage dies in the brain. Probably gets cleaned up, but
Okay, that makes sense.
yeah.
That makes sense. Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to
So
clear that up
yeah,
for my own brain.
this is how, yeah, this is how aluminum adjuvant particles get into the brain. A lot of pro-vaccine people have said, well, gosh, it just doesn't make sense that an injection of these particles in your arm or in your leg would get across the blood-brain barrier and somehow wind up in the brain. That's just crazy talk. Well, we know now that that can happen, and the mechanism appears to be this macrophage transport. This macrophage transport mechanism has been studied in many different contexts. I found quite a number of papers, 6 or 8 or something like that, papers on people exploring this ability of macrophages to use for technological or for medical therapies, where scientists are trying to get drugs into the brain. Say you have a tumor in your brain and you want to get some chemotherapeutic drugs into that tumor. How do you do that? How do you get the drugs past the blood-brain barrier? Well, one way to do it is to load it, form it into particles, load it into the macrophages, inject the macrophages into the patient, and then they'll automatically show up at the tumor because there's inflammation happening there. And this has been studied quite a bit, and it's been proven to work in many different contexts. So we know that macrophages can carry things into the brain. And it doesn't, inflammation anywhere in the body can stimulate some macrophages to head into the brain. This is a process that appears to, you know, can go on for a long time. So, and it also seems to take a while. It seems to take months for the aluminum adjuvant to wind up in the brain. And I say that because there's some studies in animals where it takes months for the inflammation to start in the brain. So you get a vaccine, and then you look 3, 4, 5, 6 months later, and only then do you notice that the aluminum is starting to show up, that the inflammation is starting to show up, and the injury is happening. And the aluminum in the brain does the same thing that it does everywhere else. It stimulates inflammation, and it stimulates interleukin-6, the cytokine that causes autism. And once those aluminum particles are in the brain, there's really no way for them to get out that I'm aware of. And so they seem to set up a chronic inflammatory process in the brain. And I think, I believe that, you know, if a child receives aluminum-containing vaccine, say the hepatitis B, the day of birth, you know, within a few months, some of that aluminum is in the brain, and it sets up a chronic inflammation in the brain that persists for months. During this period when the synapses are developing, when the brain is growing, all these connections are being made, and that damages the brain development. So in the case of aluminum adjuvant, I think that the injury is a result of a long-term chronic inflammation rather than some like an intense sort of episodic inflammation that occurs and then goes away. So, you know, if you have like a natural infection or illness, your body will produce a lot of cytokines and then it shuts off and then it goes back to normal and the inflammation and cytokines
Right.
The aluminum adjuvant, it doesn't seem to work like that. It's there and the immune system gets turned on and it stays on for months. And that's why you get this brain injury. Also, I think that that long-term chronic nature of the inflammation can make it harder for people to recognize. You know, when you have a very intense inflammatory event, you can get headaches, get fever. I mean, it's really obvious that there's inflammation happening and there's something going on. When it's a long-term sort of lower level chronic thing, it can be very difficult to recognize, I believe.
Okay, so yeah, I'm looking at, oh man, this is a lot of stuff to assimilate. Mm-hmm. So we haven't gotten to healthy user bias yet, and there was a thing on that I wanted before we aluminum thing. I mean, most people are looking at. I know I wanted to look at nutrients preventing aluminum toxicity because you have a paper on that on your website. Because people now realize that a lot of their health problems are from aluminum toxicity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
there's
nutrients that I list there from studies that I've read where they've done experiments in animals, giving animals nutrients for preventing aluminum toxicity. However, I want to caution listeners that the studies that I use to select those nutrients are not studies of aluminum adjuvant. They're just studies of water-soluble aluminum, which is different. But I still think
You
know, it may be relevant to alleviating some of this aluminum adjuvant toxicity. You know, probably one of the best approaches to alleviating aluminum adjuvant toxicity is to take nutrients that help the brain deal with inflammation better, that help reduce inflammation in the brain. And those would be things like, you know, the B vitamins, thiamine, riboflavin, NAC, there's magnesium. There's a lot of different nutrients that are known to do that. I've come across additional papers on how to reduce inflammation in the brain, and I haven't added them to that article yet. I hope to do so in the future.
Well, I'm looking at, you know, because I'm on that page right now, and I did just post it in the chat room. By the way, if anyone wants to go to the chat room, it's immunizewisely.chatandgo.com, and it's the nutrients preventing aluminum toxicity. I see you have diatomaceous earth and silica, but this is just aluminum in general, and we are exposed to a lot of aluminum in the, you know, postmodern world or whatever. We do have a lot in the environment, and certainly the nanoparticles are a concern. And of course, it makes me wonder if there's any real way of getting those nanoparticles out of your body.
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know. And there's very little research on that. Silica certainly seems to help with aluminum in general. But as far as like nutrients for the adjuvant particulates, especially, that's all we can do is speculate. And what I would do personally if I was concerned about that is I would just take a lot of everything. And then when the research is finally done, 20
years. I probably would too. Yeah. Right. Just be as healthy. Chlorella, you know, diatomaceous earth. Of course, silica is naturally bound with aluminum. It's not ever separate in nature. It's usually they're together.
Yeah, exactly. Aluminum, silicate. Yeah, silica has a natural affinity for aluminum. I'll go around and bind it up. That can at least protect you from the water soluble aluminum that is very slowly released from the adjuvant. The adjuvant is not completely insoluble. It does dissolve a little bit. And so, you know, that's water soluble aluminum is also causing damage. And so at the very least, the silica and other nutrients will help protect you from that. One other thing I wanted to mention about aluminum is an admission by the CDC, some of their researchers, Dr. Frank DeStefano. They have a paper from 2015 where they make a very interesting admission. They say, quote, to date, there have been no population-based studies specifically designed to evaluate associations between clinically meaningful outcomes and non-antigen ingredients other than thimerosal. So this is from a paper on aluminum, and it's an exploratory paper where they look at the potential for studying, you know, potential aluminum adjuvant toxicity. And they're basically admitting right there that it's never been studied in their population-based studies. And that's from the group at the CDC that does those population-based studies. So they've never looked at this stuff. They've never taken, you know, an unvaccinated group and a vaccinated group or a large population cohort and looked at how much aluminum they got and look at what sort of outcomes they have, long-term outcomes, neurological outcomes. That's never been done.
Right. And then there you have a quote that I think from this Vargas paper of how these autistics are producing a lot of this MCP1
I forgot to mention that.
Yeah. That seems important to me.
That's really important, and I forgot to mention it. In 2005, researchers from Johns Hopkins got samples of autistic brains and analyzed them for cytokines. And this was a really important study. It's been cited hundreds and hundreds of times. It's one of the big studies that really clued people in that there is inflammation happening in the brains of autistic people. And the results were so powerful that they said, this has got to have something to do with what causes autism. And one of the things that they found in that study was they found that autistic brains have very high levels of MCP1. Mm-hmm. And they do have a great quote, and I don't have it in front of me.
I think it's incredible where it basically shows that this thing, MCP1, is attracting the macrophages, and which is carrying the aluminum to the brain.
Right. To paraphrase it, they say something like, there's lots of MCP1 here. It's attracting macrophages into the brain, and this almost certainly has something to do with autism and what's going on. It's likely to be very important.
Right. It's okay. Don't try to find it. I mean, I'm sure you have it on your website.
Yeah,
and, you know, people can contact you through vaccinepapers.org, you know, if they find it. I just search. You can find a lot of stuff in the church, in the search engine. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Vargas. It's a Vargas research paper. So
I might have that wrong. I'm not sure. It was. I think we actually got a DMCP takedown request for that paper, so I'm not sure if the full text is on the site anymore. Okay. But people, you know, anybody wants to see it, people can contact me through the website. My email is vaccinepapers@gmail.com. I always respond to email, please send questions or comments, or if you have papers that are relevant or interesting, send them over. Always love looking at new stuff.
Yeah, I really wanted you to cite this paper that's used for proving safety of aluminum adjuvant, but you say it's a modeling study, so it assumes that these, you know, that it's the particles of aluminum are harmless because they're not, you know, taking into account that it's nanoparticles versus a more water soluble format.
This is the MITCA study from the FDA. It's a terrible, terrible study, and it's cited quite often as evidence that aluminum adjuvants are safe. Remember, I said that aluminum adjuvants dissolve very slowly in the body, and that slow dissolution results in a certain low level of exposure to water dissolved aluminum ions, right? And MITCA study did was they took all the past research on aluminum toxicity and the kinetics, you know, how fast it moves around the body, how fast it's excreted, and so on, and they also calculated the rate of dissolution of these adjuvants, and they used that to calculate whether the water dissolved portion of the aluminum was toxic, and they only looked at the water dissolved portion. They didn't look at the particulates, which have a completely different toxicity. I believe it's far, far more toxic, and they just completely ignored it. So basically what they're doing in this paper is assuming that the aluminum adjuvant particles are non-toxic, which doesn't make any sense because it's the particles that provide the adjuvant activity. It's the particles that provide the inflammation, and it's the inflammation that causes the damage. So it doesn't make any sense. It's a crazy paper, and it's still being cited by a lot of pro-vaccine people. But it's really meaningless and very frustrating to see this nonsense, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I do a thorough job debunking this paper on the vaccine papers website. The Girardi Research Group in France wrote a paper debunking it as well, and they used some of my arguments and some of the figures that I created in their paper. They invited me to be a co-author, but I didn't want to do that because I want to maintain my anonymity.
Okay. I get that this is your hobby in a sense, and you're pretty good at it because a lot of people have been paying attention to what's on your website, and I hope people pay attention by downloading these flyers. I mean, they're great trifold vaccines in the brain. I mean, if you could just hand that to a few people and beg them to read it, you know, as it talks about aluminum adjuvant toxicity and immune system activation. It's a great summary, has all great questions and answers at the back. It's a really good summary.
Thank you. I worked with a good friend of mine who's a graphic designer to create those. JB Handley helped pay for the printing and graphic design. I'd like to, you know, extend a lot of appreciation for his support for that. Those brochures have been really helpful. I mail them out to people all the time, but you can of course download them and print them out yourself as well. You know, they're available in all the different formats, black and white, color, A4, 8.5 by 11. Feel free to download them and print them, distribute them however you like.
Well, that's what I do. I go out with all my mailings.
That's excellent.
I do the vaccines in the brain because I want it to be real clear that, you know, it's everything. It's not just autism, you know, but autism is certainly one of the aspects. But I've been telling people that all brain anomalies, all mental health issues, bipolar, dyslexia are from vaccines.
That's right.
That for a long time.
All of those disorders are caused by immune.
Okay, we're coming up to a break. Please hold on. You're listening to Mike of Vaccine Papers.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Don't regret growing old. It's a privilege denied to many. Heart disease is taking our youth from us. Young people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond are dying needlessly. One of the hardest messages I've ever had to deliver is to convince people that something natural like Extendivite should be taken as a preventative measure. I'm sure you heard, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Extendivite is that ounce. Take Extendivite for 1 year and see what your doctor has to say and how much better you feel. Herbs take time to address the problem. It took years of life to have a problem. Give Extendivite 1 year to fix the problem. Don't wait until it's too late. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or visit us on Amazon.
Extend your life with
Welcome back. We're going to go right into the third item that hasn't been discussed. He has three basic little scientific arguments, and in summary, there three are immune activation, you know, inflammation, premature, that's, you know, when your immune system shouldn't be activated, especially in young newborns. And then we have aluminum adjuvant toxicity. And the last one is healthy user bias. Now, that confused a lot of people. What do you mean in these studies by healthy user bias? Can you explain that?
Yeah, healthy user bias is a type of bias that occurs in observational studies. It's a type of selection bias. So think for a second about any type of medical study where you're testing something on humans, a drug or a vaccine or whatever, always what you're doing is you are comparing two groups of people. And one group will get the drug or vaccine, and one group will not. And in order to conduct a proper study and get results that are meaningful, those two groups of people have to be the same in every way, except for the drug or the vaccine that they're getting or not getting. Does that make sense? They need to be
absolutely. They should be exactly equal in background and race and foods they eat and age and
you can. So if you don't do that, then you can't isolate the effect of the drug or the vaccine that you want to study. You don't know what's causing what, and so But sometimes it's not always possible to make sure that those groups are matched, as we say. We say that this is matching. So in an ideal type of study, you get a bunch of research subjects that come into your office, and the researcher has the power to decide who gets the drug and who doesn't. And they'll give that group the placebo. And when they do that allocation, when they do that selection, they'll do it randomly, or they'll do it in a way where they get a matched group on each side of the study, each arm of the study. And then you get like results that are really worthwhile and very valuable. But with vaccine studies, it's typically not done. And there's reasons why that's not done, that I won't really get into. But usually what they do in vaccine studies, they do an observational study. And in observational studies are a lot cheaper. They're faster because you can use data that's been collected for other purposes. And usually this data comes from like HMOs or health insurance companies or government medical databases and things like that. And what they do in an observational study is you're just observing. You have no ability to manipulate the behavior or who gets the drug. You're just looking at like, well, this group of people got the vaccine, this people didn't. We'll compare them. And researchers always try to make sure that they're well matched. They try to make sure that their socioeconomic, factors are similar, and other factors that they know about are similar. But it often happens that there's things that they can't control for, or things they don't know. And that creates healthy user bias. So healthy user bias refers to a specific case where the user of the drug or the user of the vaccine is healthier from the outset. Before they even get the drug or the vaccine, they're healthier just because they're the type of person to get a vaccine or take a certain drug or follow the advice of their doctor. So these people typically have more health-seeking behavior. So think about the type of person that's willing to spend $25 and spend an hour going to their pharmacy to get a flu vaccine. The vaccine may be harmful, but that type of person is going to be the type of person that's probably going to eat better. They're probably going to have they're going to exercise more. They're going to have other health-seeking behaviors. And so from the outset, those two groups are not matched because the group getting the vaccine has more of this health-seeking behavior than a group of people that doesn't. And this is what you see in, for example, the flu vaccine studies. There is a great study done on the flu vaccine in elderly people. And interestingly, this study was focused on healthy user bias, and these researchers wanted to show that this was happening. And so what they did was very clever. They looked at the health outcomes in the summertime when the flu is not circulating. And what they found was that the people that got the flu vaccine the previous year or the previous winter had much, much better health outcomes in the following summer. Their rates of death were lower. They had, by almost every metric, they were healthier. And of course, the researchers concluded this is just healthy user bias. The types of people getting the vaccine are just healthier. It's not that the vaccine isn't. The flu vaccine somebody gets in November isn't improving their mortality statistics the following summer. It's biologically implausible. It doesn't even make any sense. And so this is a really clever way to show that there's something very wrong with these studies. And this stuff is pervasive, I think. I think it's very common in these vaccine studies, these observational vaccine studies, and it distorts a lot of the results. And I think it's particularly important for the debate around childhood vaccines, because I think there's a lot of healthy user bias happening in studies of children. And we'll get to that in a second.
Well, thank you. Okay. Yep. Okay, we're coming up on a break. We're going to take callers the next section.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Talk Right, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. Talk Right makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download Talk Right today from Google Play or the App Store.
Hey, is that a new music app?
Yeah, check it out. Surfer Music Discovery. It links to thousands of online stations, but the twist is you see the song names and artists that are now playing live.
That's different. No guessing. Looks like a waterfall of music.
So many formats. Rock, oldies, country, R&B, jazz, and a whole lot more.
How's that spelled?
Surfer. S-U-R-F-R.
Is it expensive?
It's free. No need to sign up or sign in.
Get the Surfer Music app free from Google Play or the App Store.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Out on a great interview with Mike of Vaccine Papers, and we're going to go ahead and continue. But before we do, I'm going to go ahead and put out the caller line. It's 800-313-9443 if you have a question for Mike. Again, that's 800-313-9443. But Mike has, you know, just a few more minutes, you know, to finish up. He wants to finish up on the healthy user bias as to explain the results of the MM autism study. It's going to totally make sense. I really want you to dive into that. It makes more sense to me even than ones.
Great. So after the, in 1998, people probably know, you know, there was a big controversy that erupted after the claim that claim was made that MMR causes autism. And after that, there were quite a number of studies done on MMR and autism, and these were observational studies. And as I pointed out, in an observational study, researchers don't have the power, don't have the ability to choose who gets the vaccine and who doesn't. So you're just looking at, you know, basically parental choice and the types of people that choose to get the MMR or not. And I think there's a lot of healthy user bias in the MMR autism studies. There were about 30 studies done, I think, up to date, and every single one of them did not find an association between the MMR vaccine and autism. In fact, many of them found an inverse association, meaning that the MMR vaccine seemed to prevent autism. The rates of autism were higher in the children that did not get the MMR, which is sort of backwards from what you might naively expect. So what's going on here?
Let's go into the source of the observation. They came from HMOs and health insurance and government medical databases. So I think that's important as the source. These aren't totally unvaccinated people. These are people that just didn't get the MMR.
Right, exactly. So think about the MMR. The MMR is given at about, I can't remember exactly, 12 or 15 months, something like that. The MMR, the point is... 12 to 18, okay. So the point is that the MMR vaccine is one of the last vaccines in the child series. It's given after the HPV vaccine at the date of birth and the vaccines at 2, 4, and 6 months. So what I think is happening is children receive all those vaccines at 0, 2, 4, and 6 months. And around that time, parents start to notice that their child is not developing normally. They notice that there's some injury going on, and they become concerned that vaccines are injuring their child, at least in some of the children that are vaccine injured. And so when it's time for them to get MMR, they say, well, I don't know about this. Like, I'm concerned that, you know, our children are being damaged by vaccines. And particularly, I heard MMR was quite dangerous because it's been one of the most talked about of the vaccines. So these are the children that don't get the MMR. The children that do not get the MMR are the children that are injured by vaccines at 0, 2, 4, and 6 months. And that creates healthy user bias. It creates healthy user bias because those vaccine-injured children are concentrated in the unvaccinated group of all these studies. This is a problem that is mentioned in many of the papers on MMR and autism. But the researchers in all these papers dance around the issue. They don't deal with it head on because they're unable to. There's nothing they can do to fix the data and take away the bias because they have no idea how big that bias is. So in order for them to do any research whatsoever, they sort of have to ignore it and pretend that it's not as big of a problem as it might be. They say, well, this can't really be a big problem. Because if they were to admit it was a big problem, it means their whole paper is meaningless and they shouldn't even bother doing it. So, of course, they say, well, it's not really a problem.
So let's just repeat. Right. It's actually confusing to people. So let me just try to repeat it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, really, I'm serious. I have people that are going, huh, I'm confused. So you're looking at a population from health maintenance organizations, government databases, insurance companies. These are people that typically do everything the doctor says. They got the birth, you know, they got all the shots, right? Mm-hmm. So there's the people that didn't get the MMR are likely ones that said, I've heard that there's maybe a problem from Wakefield and, you know, people are nervous about the MMR. And I'm noticing my baby isn't as normal as some of her playmates, you know, or she just seems slow. Yeah. I'm concerned. So yeah. I think I want to put off this vaccine or maybe never get it.
Right. Or, so they'll just say, no, or they'll just say no more vaccines. We did a bunch. The baby got injured. No more vaccines for us. And then because the MMRs were the last given, that's the one they don't get.
But they're included. All these people that avoided the MMR are included in their observational studies that's the group that did not get the MMR. And then the other group is ones that got all the vaccines, including the MMR. And the reason they got the MMR, because they didn't see any issues and the babies were healthy. They seemed to survive all that.
Right. Healthy user bias.
And then some of them went ahead and did get autism. But when you compare these two groups, they're not really the same.
Right. The users of the MMR vaccine are healthier, but it's not because of the MMR.
Overall.
Because those are the types of people that get the MMR. The people that are not vaccine injured are the ones that get the MMR. And that's what produces all these results. And this is a problem.
I mean, they're injured. I think they're all injured. It's just not overt. It's
right.
You know, I think anyone that gets a vaccine, frankly, it's not an overt injury.
And this problem affects every single one of the MMR autism studies. There's not a single one of those studies that's not affected by this type of selection bias, this healthy user bias. So a lot of people have made the claim, you know, when they look at these MMR autism studies that, oh, the researchers are corrupt, these results are manipulated, all this stuff. There's no evidence for that for the vast majority of these studies. There's so many of them by so many different research groups. The researchers, I think, are really trying to do the best they can. The problem is they don't appreciate how much vaccine injury is happening at these from these earlier vaccines. And they don't appreciate why some children are not getting the MMR. But the healthy user bias with the MMR and autism issue invalidates all their studies and means that they're all wrong. Until they do proper randomized study of this, which would be admittedly very difficult and expensive to do, we're just not going to know for sure. There was a really important paper published in 1994 by two researchers, two very well-known epidemiologists at the CDC that explored this problem in studies of vaccine safety. And they wrote a really wonderful paper on it. I have it on my website, and I encourage people to read it. It's called Confounding in Studies of Adverse Reactions to Vaccines. And it focuses on SIDS because the same problem happens with SIDS. Sudden infant death syndrome. The types. Yeah, it's and what they do a lot of quantitative analysis in this paper showing that none of the studies supposedly showing that vaccines do not cause SIDS are reliable because of this effect. And they discuss in the paper how difficult it is to do research that's not affected by this. This is a very difficult problem with vaccine safety research, and all over the place, I believe it invalidates much of the vaccine safety research. Basically, any vaccine safety research that relies on an observational study design should probably just be ignored.
Yeah, I would say so. Based on the way you explain healthy user bias, it's absolutely clear to me. And that's why I wanted to repeat it again, because I think this is something that people generally don't even think about. And they understand that it's not necessarily as corrupt as they might want to
Corruption can't possibly explain 30, very thorough studies on MMR and autism by researchers all over the world. But, you know, researchers are human and they can make mistakes like this. And they, if they don't appreciate, you know, how vaccine injury can be very common and how parents' vaccinating decisions can be influenced by what they observe in their child, it's exactly the kind of thing that researchers won't pay attention to when they're looking at pages and numbers. And so I think that's why they get all these wrong results.
Yeah, we actually had the paper in the Netherlands or whatever analyzed for other things. Anyway, it's been a long time since I've actually looked at all the MMR studies, and I didn't look at it in as much detail as my webmaster, who is much more left brain than me and more like you, you know, wants to look at all that detail, and he actually did a thorough analysis of the study of the MMR vaccine in Europe, so... the one that I think was Thorson was involved in, Paul Thorson.
Yeah, he's the fugitive criminal that they won't bring back.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Anyhow, I'm looking and we don't have any callers, and it could be just the holidays, or it could be that you're so interesting nobody wants to interrupt you. Anyhow, the number is 800-313-9443. If you have a question for Mike, if you're trying to find something, he does have a search engine on the site. I was just trying to find that last paper you were talking about. I wasn't able to locate it. I was going to try posting it in the chat room and, you know, for looking at later.
Oh, it's on the Healthy User Bias page. Healthy User Bias, the Fatal Flaw in Vaccine Safety Research. And it's just a couple pages.
Yeah, I already used that. I already posted that, the healthy user bias one. But anyway, yeah, I went. I actually looked at the library, but you only have two papers posted there. under healthy user bias?
Oh, there's several in the article. There's one in particular by Fine and Chen, called "Confounding in Studies of Adverse Reactions to Vaccines."
Yes. Okay, that's it. Okay, because I already posted that. So.
Oh. Okay.
I mean, I posted the link to it, but I didn't post the confounding studies and adverse reactions. Yeah, Fine and Chen. I see it now. Okay, got it. I just had to, you know, scroll down and find it that it was in that particular link. Okay. Oh, this is so. The next thing is I wanted to have you mention that you have a paper that you put out to some activists, you know, or what you would call vaccine critics, trying to get people focused on these three issues mm-hmm. in presenting their arguments. Right. And I know that, you know, I was looking, I mean, the thing is, you know, we all say that they do have vested interests. It's hard not to think that because, mm-hmm. you know, I know you don't like to think that there's any conspiracy here, but, you know, you have an article or a response to Dr. Gorski,
mm-hmm.
ORAC,
mm-hmm.
and yeah. that was from 2016. And I read that with great interest. Of course, he never responded to you after he attacked
yeah.
you.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, if these were honest intellectuals, honestly wanting to find an answer, you'd think that he would be bold enough to go ahead and debate the issue with you. But that wasn't the case.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think they're really that interested in a debate. I mean, they are so completely convinced that they're right that they don't, you know, to them, it's just a waste of time to have any discussion. And they just want to say what they have to say and not really analyze or think too much. So I don't think those people are corrupt or anything like that. I just think that they're just very arrogant. They don't question their own conclusions enough.
Okay.
Question their own beliefs.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyone to me that denigrates themselves to the point where they're, you know, just doing all kinds of emotional hype and then, you know, projecting that onto the people that are against vaccines and really trying to drive this thing into a violent encounter. I mean, it's cuckoo. I mean, even Paul Offit admits that the very act of vaccinating someone is a violent act, and it is a violent act.
Yeah, I mean, it's a matter of perspective, I suppose. One of my opinions is that some vaccines are really needed. They just need to be much safer. I mean, some of these diseases are quite dangerous, you know, like diphtheria, for example. It's really unfortunate that the diphtheria vaccine is so dangerous because it contains aluminum adjuvant. But, I mean, the pro-vaccine people have a point. I mean, some of these diseases are dangerous, and vaccination is a good way to prevent them. But we're not making progress on making safe vaccines because they are so confident, the other side is so confident, that there is no problem. I mean, the first thing, you know, the first step to fixing a problem is admitting that you have a problem. And we need to get that first step.
Okay, so if I didn't want, if they made safer vaccines, would you think it's a wrong thing if I declined them?
No,
it's okay.
Yeah, people should always have the free choice. I wouldn't force anything on anybody, you know.
Right. I mean, if people want to use their immune system that way, I say great. But, you know, we have homeoprophylaxis. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but I had a practitioner of homeoprophylaxis. Yeah. The studies show that the children treated with homeoprophylaxis are much healthier than the completely unvaccinated children, and of course healthier than the vaccinated children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know very much about it. I've not read very much about it, so I can't really comment on it. I received the yellow fever vaccine several years ago when I went on a trip to the Amazon. You know, it's a live, mm-hmm. it doesn't contain an adjuvant. It's a live virus vaccine. So it's like getting an infection. And I thought it was a good vaccine to get. I don't want to be in the middle of nowhere in the Amazon and get bitten by a mosquito and get yellow fever. I mean, it can kill you. So I thought that was a good choice to make. But forcing vaccines on people is crazy. Injecting children with aluminum hydroxide nanoparticles is crazy. And ignoring, you know, all these problems with immune activation and healthy user bias is crazy.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, you know, I know people that have suffered pretty horribly from a yellow fever vaccine, too. You know, I mean, maybe they have a slight allergy to eggs and they didn't know it, but, you know, because it is cultured in egg protein. So
that's right. Yep. It's not without risk.
I just think, that's the whole thing. Okay. We are coming up on a break. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Immunize Wisely.
No, no, let's
do it. It's okay. We don't have. Oh, we do. Okay. It doesn't matter to me. Oh, yeah. We could take Michael. It shouldn't be very long. I was just, I thought we'd maybe have more callers, but, you know, it's okay. Oh, he is? Oh, we didn't do the break. Oh, okay. Michael in New York. Welcome.
Yes,
hello. Wisely. Thanks for calling in. Hi, Michael.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you. I'm just catching up on some work, and I tuned in. I heard the conversation, and I figured I'd just chime in a little bit on the topic.
Okay. Do you have a question for Mike, or you just want to comment?
Well, no. I just comments primarily. Number one, as far as curing everything, that's one of the things I do for a living through herbs, cure everything, piece of cake. And when doctors, some of my people have regular doctors and they see the cancer's totally gone, they never say, wow, how do you do that? Let's contact this person. How many people we can help? That never happens. So that tells you everything right there. And even animals, parvo, things they don't even have close to a handle on, piece of cake. I know how to, you know, I'm not really saying I'm curing it. I say Mother Nature's doing it. I just know how to get the job done. Now, as far as the autism and SIDS, as a scientist, what they're ignoring, the establishment is refusing to acknowledge, is the data. When you just take a simple XY plot chart and you show that the introduction of vaccines and then the increasing frequency of them, and then at the same time the introduction of the manifestation of autism and SIDS, and then its correlation and frequency on an XY plot, and you see it is a direct relationship. And that is the evidence to prove they are causing all that. And I haven't heard anybody, you know, actually present it like that to them somewhere in a meeting at a government level or whatever, just to say, explain that, medical establishment.
That argument's not true. I mean, correlation is not causation. Just because two things happen at the same time doesn't mean that one caused the other. So that's not a valid argument. You can't make that
really
argument.
When you're troubleshooting something and you see on the plot the data points, one-to-one correlation, frequency of vaccines increasing, frequency of autism increasing or SIDS, where prior there was hardly any existence of the diseases.
It's not valid in the context of looking at disease trends over time. It's totally invalid. You can't do that. I mean, it's necessary, but it's not nearly sufficient for showing causation.
So when you present that
Michael,
data in that
Michael,
form,
Michael,
so I just want to say, wait,
we're going to run out of time. For you to leave your phone. Michael, can you leave your phone number with Ken, please? He asked me because I want to talk to you after the show.
Okay, personally. Sure, I'd be glad to. Let me just say, if I can just say real quick to Mike.
Yeah.
Mike, when you see that data and it doesn't even cause a response to say we got to at least look into this to see if there is a direct correlation, that you got to be kidding me.
No, that I agree with you. Yeah, I mean, if you see two
okay,
things
so
in
then
one
once
form,
you get that far, yeah. So okay, Mike. So once you get that far, then you say, okay, let's do a trial case here and not vaccinate so many kids. Do a population study and then verify if those kids are still getting the disease or not that aren't getting vaccinated. And then you look at that XY plot, and lo and behold, they're not getting it. And then what's your conclusion? Yeah, okay.
A correlation is enough to look into something, but it doesn't mean a whole lot on its own. You need to have much more to make a claim that something
right.
is causing.
So that's why the study. What Michael's saying is that study is not being done.
Right, I'm saying is then you take the next step and you do a study with a certain population size that doesn't get the vaccines and see how many of them are getting these diseases, and you'll see hardly any at all either. Then what's your conclusion? Okay,
well,
I agree.
There's a lot of safety research that's not being done that needs to be done.
Okay, I've got to cut you loose, honey. Give Ken your phone number, please, and then we're going to take another caller real quick. So we have Pat in Fort Worth. Sorry, Pat.
Oh, hey. I just wonder if you saw a correlation between
hi,
the...
Pat. You have a quick...
Hi. Can you hear me? I just wonder if you saw a correlation
you. Do you have
between...
a quick question?
I just wonder if you saw a correlation between the time they stopped using the horseshoe crab blood, saying they didn't have enough of it, and that all these diseases. But, you know, actually they are harvesting a lot of that horseshoe blood. But, you know, that now we got a whole lot of diabetics out there. They're getting, like, insulin four times a day and still eating sugar. And so we're taking care of the old people that don't take care, or older people don't take care of their body and let the babies go.
It's
sad.
I mean, horseshoe crab blood is not present in vaccines. It's used to test for the presence of microbial contaminants.
Well, that kills everything. That's why they're still here. They kill everything. That blue blood kills everything. And why can't you put vitamin C in there? It kills everything, too.
We have 40 seconds left of the show, okay? We could go on and on with this.
Thank you very much, Ingrid. Joe, it was a pleasure speaking with you.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Sorry, Pat. Yeah, this is a little out of context.
I really appreciate the opportunity to get this information out there. I think it's important, and I enjoy being on your show.
I actually really want to have you on again sometime. So we'll tighten up the whole thing so that we can do it another time.
Okay, that sounds great.
I really appreciate your work, and I hope people go to Vaccine Papers.
Okay.
So thank you so much, everyone. Thank you for calling, and sorry we had callers late. There was just so much to cover.
No worries.
And stay tuned next week in the new year. We'll see you in 2020.
Cool. Talk soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices. Rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America.
With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at libertystickers.com. Again, that's libertystickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.